Welcome to Never Meet Your Idols,
a podcast where your idols get real, whether you like it or not.
Well, hi, welcome to Never Meet Your Idols. I am your host, Karay.
And I'm Laura Mary.
And today's a very exciting day because we're doing our first episode in person.
I know, it's crazy. It's like, haven't seen anyone for months and now it's like...
awkward as fuck. and we have churches here in the studio with us, right in front of us in real life.
Here's your idol.
Churches. Yep.
It's really weird, cool. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking about getting used to it for me as well, to be honest. I'm like, whoa, there's people.
We've lost all social skills. Yeah. Not how to interact with people that aren't each other and our immediate loved ones. Don't know how to do it.
I didn't have many social skills to begin with, so. And we're all in Los Angeles, yet I am the only American in the room. So what the hell are you guys doing here?
That's a good point.
You invited us.
You're outnumbered. Well, we're here... Ian is normally in Glasgow, but he's finally managed to come over here to work on some new music, and the album, the new Churches album, comes out at the end of the month. So little bits of promo and little bits of studio time.
Mm.
And it's August 29th it comes out?
27th.
Day after my birthday.
Oh, cool.
Are you guys here the entire time doing press in LA, like in person, or is this... your first in-person interview with us?
I'm actually trapped. We're actually trapped here. Lauren and I are trapped here. Well, I am, at least, because our visa's expired. So we can't leave.
Because you won't be able to come back in.
Yes, but they're not taking the appointments.
Yeah.
If they're like, if you have a work visa that's provisionally approved and you're already in America, they're like, you're fine.
Yeah.
Just stay there.
Stupid.
But we can't get out.
Lucky
to be in a place full of sunshine, and we can do work, and we can...
And you're together.
Yeah.
Well, it could be a lot worse, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's kind of just our whole studio setup is here, and so we've been working away on the next thing that comes out after Screen Violence, which has been really, really refreshing, because normally when you're making a record, your whole mindset is only focused on that. And you're obsessed with it every day. You think about it and talk about it, and you worry about whether or not it's going to work or it's not going to work. But now, my head is so like in new music that I'm like, if it doesn't work, we've got a bunch of new songs.
Yeah.
It's fine. Just put them out.
Yeah, that's good emotional exercise. Wish we'd done it like this previously, but I guess time. There was never time like that in a previous album cycle universe. So that's one of the positive things I guess you can take away from this is time to. Every musician always complains too much time on the road is bad for your creativity. And now we're like, there's no road.
There is no road.
All we can do is make music, which is quite pleasant in many ways.
Yeah, that is cool. I feel like during COVID and stuff, that's like the one thing, if you have got a studio set up and stuff, you can just get on with writing the next stuff. Yeah, I think like that is a positive because... I don't know, a lot of people have creativity blocks at the moment, but if you guys can do it, then you might as well go ahead and like write the next stuff, and then
it must help that you're all together too, with the so you could all be writing in the same room instead of trying to write.
It's a hell of a lot easier to well, particularly to write new ideas.
Yeah,
like if there are ideas in place, which a lot of them were when we were making Screen Violence remotely. It's much easier to sort of collaborate online in terms of like arranging and producing and that sort of stuff, but actually like coming up with new ideas is next to impossible over Zoom.
What is your writing process? Because Lauren, you played drums, right? You have a history.
I did in a previous a previous life. I guess I haven't really played drums at all
for this band.
Churches started.
Oh wow!
On the second record, there was like kind of electronic drum set, and we would use it like a few times during the show. But most of the drumming on the records has been programmed, and then we did have a live drummer. So then Johnny, our live drummer, would play whenever we needed kit done. So, but yeah, I guess none of us come from like a kind of pop band background. We're all from more like alternative guitar sort of backgrounds. But most of the time we'll start. either with a demo that one of the guys has, or we'll start with the instrumental and work up a vocal melody on top of that, and then get to lyrics. So I just get to kind of hang out and bob my head for the first section and vibe in the background until it's time for lyrics, for the most part.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm.
You have a little system figured out then. Everyone has their role.
It's been 10 years of churches, so at this point I'm like, I think we all, yes. We're still going though. You said, don't. It was a big sigh. You were like,
phew. No, it wasn't a sigh.
Still seem to
it was
like
each
other.
Yeah.
10 years, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 10 years of liking each other and working together is impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I think you guys like each other. We're making you sit really close to each other on the sofa, so hopefully you like each other.
We did ask for separate studios to do the interview, but I don't think that was granted.
It's the most like a sort of like a family I've ever experienced outside of, you know, my biological family.
Yeah.
So it's great. There's lots of ups and downs, but you know, we're all humans and we all work really well together in the end. So that's what really, you know, brought us together and keeps us together.
That's hard to find. There being three of you, I always wonder what happens when you don't agree on something creatively. Like, do you have a vote and it's like two against one?
I've never had to really do that.
Really?
Three is a horrible number for like a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Because one person will always feel like they're getting the raw deal.
Yeah.
And that they're being ganged up on in some way. So in fact, if there's a disagreement, even if the person is outnumbered, my stance is usually just be like, okay, explain yourself, and if you, in an impassioned way, you really, really mean what you say, then we just like, okay, then it is what it is. It's more like a veto system than a democracy.
Yeah.
But you have to take it all case by case.
So like, if there's a song that you guys finish for the record and one person's like, I hate this song, I don't want it on the record. And the other two people are like...
Has she been in the room with us?
I mean, I always wonder this because, like, I don't have bandmates for this reason. Like, I get a touring band.
Yeah.
But when it comes to writing and being creative, like, I'm like, no... It's only me because it's not a democracy.
Yeah.
So I just always am curious about when there's three people.
Mm. That's usually the only... That type of thing is the only source of, like, real disagreement between us ever. And it usually comes down to a veto system.
Yeah.
But, like, with the same token, it's like, state your case. Do you want to die on this hill? Do you care enough to
choose your battle
all the way
mm-hmm.
for this song, whether you really want it on the album or you really don't? Usually if one person feels strongly enough, the other two will be like, all right, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not worth fighting.
Like a trust thing as well, I think.
Yeah.
I think you have to just trust that no one's going to use their veto for selfish reasons or pointlessly. And I don't know, sometimes I'm sure we've all thought about it and we're like, man, if you didn't have to... have a three-way decision-making process, you could make decisions really quickly, but I don't know if they would be, in my opinion, for me, I don't think I would make the best decisions or the best music by myself.
Yeah.
I think I've always liked being part of a band, and especially this band, I'm like, I only do a tiny part of what the band is, so... But you know what I mean? Like, each of us plays an important role in what it is, so I think it would be, like, arrogant to be like, oh, I can just do it myself. It would be much easier to do it myself. I don't think that applies in our minds.
Yeah, I'm just arrogant.
No, I mean, like, once you're in a band, like, if
you
always...
Especially if
you
trust each other. That's the thing. Like, if you trust and respect each other, you just sometimes are like, yeah, I can accept that maybe you're right and I'm just not getting it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and trust each other's skill set and, like, respect that, I suppose. And, like, yeah, I've definitely been in bands with people where I didn't have a similar enough mentality or a similar enough taste to make anything that good, and it was just... constantly like pushing and pulling against the tide, but I feel like we have a skill set that 99% of the time really matches up really well, and most of the time we do agree, so
yeah.
I feel like the positives definitely outweigh the negatives. Like once every couple of years maybe we'll be like, oh, that fucking song, and we'll wrestle about it, but I feel like all bands have that somewhere. It's just the perils of
once
band,
every couple of years is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
That's pretty good.
It's usually like a really... It's kind of like a bad problem to have. If it gets that far, it's usually because labels and your managers and sometimes bandmates are like, this is fucking massive, we need to cut it. And then, like, some people are, whether it's me or Lauren or Ian, for whatever reason, will be like, I don't feel like this is right for us. And then, so like a 2 month argument will like ensue.
And every time we don't put out the pop song, like a fairy at the label dies.
Like, yeah. There's plenty of label fairies. It's fine. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, if the album comes out and it really works, everyone's like, well, you had the song anyway. And then if it doesn't come out, they're like,
Should've released the song.
Everybody always knows best in hindsight. Of course. And they're like, oh, fine.
Failure is a bastard, as they say.
Did they say that?
Success has a thousand fathers, failure is a bastard.
Oh, that's new to me.
Is that a Scottish thing? I've never heard this before.
I like it.
I just discovered that the word outwith is only a word in Scottish.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes, like outwith the realms of possibility.
But that seems like very pop common phrase.
So last night I used the word outwith and I tried to, and it wouldn't autocorrect, and I was like, what the fuck? And I looked this up, it's only in Scotland.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know that. And
see?
I have no idea what you're saying.
Jeez.
I mean, I've heard it, but I didn't really, yeah.
I mean, it seems like quite an antiquated word, doesn't it?
Maybe. I've noticed that Fortnite confuses people outside of the UK sometimes as
N-I-T-E.
Well.
N-I-T-E?
Well, like, Knight's not
like
a word.
Fortnite. Not like the game, but like once a fortnight, once every 2 weeks, like 14 nights Fortnite.
Right.
Like, no.
Would you know
that? No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
We could just go around making stuff up.
Yeah, seriously, I believe it.
To people.
This is great content, isn't it?
That's why we're here, mate. That's why we're here.
She's a songwriter. She appreciates language. It's fine.
Yeah. I don't know if you know the show much or like the whole premise behind it, but the main question we ask every guest is, have you ever met your idol? And if so, what were they like?
This is kind of a contentious one because the guy...
At last.
Does it begin with an M?
It does, because the guy went on to prove himself as like a racist and actually a cunt. But before, at this point, he wasn't yet out as like a BNP loving. Like,
no, he was just
right-wing cunt.
Casually. People were like, "Is he racist? He seems a little sexist. I can't tell." Fully down yet.
We're talking about Morrissey.
Okay,
I once met Morrissey in an airport lounge after Outside Lands, San Francisco.
I think so, yeah.
On our first album, or some, we were in San Francisco for whatever reason, I don't remember. And we came in the lounge and I was like, holy shit, there's Morrissey. This is like 2014. And I'm like, I'm going to go and say hello. Like, I don't care what you guys say. You don't understand what these lyrics mean to me. The Smiths is the most important band ever alongside The Cure. They're like, man, he's got a bit of a rep, don't do it. They're like, fuck it. And you know, who dares wins. And all I wanna say is, you know, the proper like fanboy shit. Sorry to disturb you. I just wanted to say thank you for like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And just as I got up to him, he sort of looked up from his newspaper and a security guard jumped up from his seat and put his hand in my face and was like right in my face, pushed me back and was like, no, not now, right in my face. I was like, what? And I kind of turned my back as Morrissey started laughing at me and like put his head back in his newspaper.
Oh my God.
I had to walk of shame across the whole airport lounge.
He's like laughing.
And you know what's another, it was like, he was laughing, yeah. But it was a kind of a bit of an ego check, because at that point in 2014, things were going really well for us, and we were like, it was like we were, I don't want to say, we were blown up, but we were. It was like things were moving really quickly, and we thought we were really fucking cool and whatever. And I just got slaughtered.
Annihilated.
Nah. It was like...
Not cool enough for Morrissey.
Not cool enough for Morrissey. And yet, maybe the universe was doing me a favour.
Yeah.
Because next thing you know, is him and Nigel Farage are licking each other's arses and they're publicly...
Literally?
You know, I mean, maybe. So...
But it was a very on-brand... Like, the way we tried to make you feel better about it was... That it was a very on-brand interaction. If you had met Morrissey and he had been so nice and like so thoughtful and been like, that's so amazing that you say that my work means, he doesn't care. So if anything, you're like, that's probably what teenage you thought Morrissey would do.
I thought he might just actually say, all right, nice to meet you, have a nice life.
Yeah.
Which is all I really wanted.
Just acknowledgement.
Yeah.
I guess you never know what's happening in somebody's internal life, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Morris, he's a kind.
I'm kind of on that page.
Well, even on his good days.
It's a good lesson in we're obviously all fans of things, but it was probably a good reminder of like what that feels like to be a fan if someone can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Well, I was a bigger fan of The Cure in the first place, and then we have since come to know Robert Smith, who is a lovely human being.
It's
and
a lot
like,
more approachable.
The dream scenario in every way. So to me, that just settles the age-old argument.
So we did meet that idol.
And you collaborated with him on the network, correct?
So, and he actually is even better than I thought.
Yeah, lovely guy.
I would say.
Very funny.
Yeah, very funny, very dry. Mm. Like, we've done, like, some promo stuff with him on Zoom, and it's just constantly, like, he's making these jokes that are on the cusp of too edgy, and it's about to derail the promo at any moment.
Yeah.
But I think that's good that if somebody can still enjoy music and enjoy promoting it, like, I feel like that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really bad.
So you weren't
just being that far in.
Did you work with him remotely when you were recording the song because it was during quarantine?
We did, yeah. It was mostly all done over email, actually.
All right.
Because we were in LA at the time, and obviously he's back in the UK, so we had very different working hours. Although, as it turns out, we had the same working hours because he's a night owl.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
The first stuff that he did on the track was actually on Halloween. He was up all night drinking and writing and singing and had a great time, and he was so excited to share it with us, and we were just like, this is just too surreal, you know.
That's
the goth lord himself in Halloween with a goblet of, you know, whatever it was.
That was really heartening to me because I was like, Robert, like from what I can tell, doesn't have any like airs and graces around him in terms of how he thinks about himself. And yeah, it's interesting when we hear other people and the experiences our friends have had with certain collaborators they've worked with who are in no way as highly regarded as that, but really believe that they are. I feel like it was a good lesson in terms of never believe your own press too much to think that you're too good for it. And I think it's just such, he respects music and he respects other people.
He's a fan of music, that's what he really is.
I think it's rare that truly top level people are dicks. I think that like everyone in that rung below the absolute top level, you meet dicks everywhere, and they're all really ego driven, and everybody wants a grooming budget or like whatever, or
if you want to give me the grooming budget, I will take it, because I'm not good at styling my own hair. It's very fluffy, but I wouldn't go around being like.
But when you meet the people who are like the absolute like legends, they're usually really calm, really lovely, and they're just like want to put good things out into the world because they're. Life has been kind to them in a lot of ways, you know, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, like, how did it come about with the collaboration? Did he, like, approach you or did you approach him? Or?
We were just, to use the parlance of our time, we shot our shot. We were to shoot our shot.
That's another Scottish thing.
It's an internet thing.
Speak American.
Our manager was trying to get a support, right? And he says, oh, we know some people in the business or whatever. And they asked him, do you have a contact for the Cure's management? Not understanding that Robert, in fact, manages himself and they have no manager. And then they got back to Robert and he just emailed Campbell one day being like, what do you want? And our manager had to call us and say, guys, Robert Smith has just emailed me asking, what do you want?
I may have over-hustled, he said.
Yeah, so he's like, what do we want? And we, right
like, here's
away.
Here's a list.
Yeah, I was like, well, I guess we should just send him as much music as we can and like beg him to be on a song and see what he says.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure people do all the time. And he, right away, he just zeroed in on this one track that we actually was kind of the top of our list. We were thought that this would make the most sense for a collaboration, and the ball was rolling really quickly. It was all dealt with directly, and then it went quiet, you know, in the way that those things sometimes do, and you're like, oh well, well, I've emailed Robert Smith then, and like he's heard our music and he says he likes some of it and he asked for stems. That's fucking cool.
But we haven't heard from him in a month.
But then like 2 months went by and I'm like, well, if there's one thing you don't do is you don't chase that. You never chase that. Like, just be like, okay.
Yeah.
It's over. And then, as Ian said, like, I remember we were steaming on Halloween, drinking at my house, drinking red wine, and like listening to records, whatever. And it just came through in the email from Robert being like, there's my vocal on your song. Let me know what you think.
So cool. Yeah.
Send me notes when you get a chance.
Yeah. And even funnier was that one of the main reasons I was scared to send the music in the first place is so there's so much guitar playing on it that was just kind of very influenced by his work, shall you say. I half expected them to be like, are you guys taking the piss? Like, are you really sending this to me? It's like, you're stealing my licks or whatever. But what he did say was, do you want me to just play some guitar on this as well? Because it kind of seems like that's what you're going for. And we obviously said, yes, please.
Cool.
And so he ended up playing on it as well, which was, I mean, it's a good story. It's a nice meet your idol story.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's one on each side.
Yeah.
Is there any more idols that you guys have met? Or?
The big one for me, I think, is probably Debbie Harry. I mean,
oh,
Harry,
cool.
Cool.
That was the only time I think I've ever been properly, like, to use it, well, starstruck, I guess.
Yeah.
She's just so fucking cool. She's exactly as cool and kind of nonchalant as you expect she would be, you know? Mm-hmm. And she had been brought in, it was the VMA Awards, I think, and she'd been brought in to sort of introduce our band.
It's really nice that you think that we played the VMAs. We
definitely
did.
It was Video Music Awards.
Wasn't that? Anyway, yes,
we
did some award thing in New York.
Grammys.
We were playing the Grammys and the Oscars on one night.
Yes.
Okay. But no, it's like that You Ought to Know show they used to do where it's like a bunch of bands on a revolving stage and we were being introduced by Debbie Harry, and they'd written her this script which was so
cringe.
It was
weird, wasn't it?
And I remember being like, don't make Debbie say that about us, she doesn't know us. And it was all just very cheesy.
Yeah, mate.
And then when she after the rehearsal, when she introduced us, she'd rewritten it, and I was like, that's what you would think she would do. She was like, I'll write something that's authentic to me, and I'll introduce just
was
band.
It not just more like,
here they are.
Yeah, pretty much.
Something which it was
I've
like,
never heard of them before.
This band inspires me on a daily basis. And I was like, don't make Debbie say that if she doesn't
she
feel
did.
Like
she
that.
Really loved the song Lies. We talked about that afterwards. And
she was like, all the hell from there? No, she didn't.
And I really wanted to say that the lyrics from that song were like influenced by Videodrome. I didn't do it. I was just
Well, because it's Debbie Harry in New York, and she's like she's in the VIP bit chatting to folk. We were just like
at the Grammys.
At the Grammys where we were playing, with Beyonce.
When you guys were about to go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's it.
Yeah. Your induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
She was
very
just
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Super cool.
Oh, that's another. We met. Depeche. Depeche Mode when we were like not big enough or like anywhere near good enough to be on this stage. It was very embarrassing. Not embarrassing.
Story
like,
of
I'm
my
sure
life.
We did it.
We
did it. We
have
we
no idea. Like the first album wasn't even out. We had an EP. We played like 6 months of shows, but we didn't. And then we're in like stadiums, football stadiums in Europe, and we were like.
Terrifying.
Well, that was like still one of my crowning achievements was that
you
played the San
job.
Siro Stadium in Milan, which is a very famous like football arena, and I went straight to the gift shop and bought a football and went out onto the pitch and started like playing like keeping it up and, like kicking the ball around.
And you
then
got
this,
that
like,
way.
Italian guy came running out like being like, "Nah!" Fucking shouting at me, Italian, "Get off the pitch." I assume he meant stop. You're like, this is a
sacred
space,
ground.
And you are a piece of shit. Why are you doing this? And I was just like, yeah. But you can't. He couldn't take it away because it had been done.
That's it.
Yeah. So I played at the San Siro.
Yes,
that's cool.
One night that they used to do these. I mean, I think a lot of like huge legacy acts do them. These like mega mega VIP packages that are for people that are really rich, mm-hmm. and that like the after the show there's like a like caviar and shit like that, and wow. we were like weren't allowed in, like it was for all the people
the
that
caviar
paid,
wasn't on your rider.
No, it was for all the people that paid like $5,000 a ticket or whatever, and
we were like
us,
hungry.
We were hungry, Scottish. Us being us, were like, well, we'll just fucking. We'll go down.
We snuck it
and
in
the guy at the front door was like, nah, I don't think so. And I was like, okay. We went round the back and like in through the smoking area or something, just went in. And of course,
clearly
some,
not dressed for the occasion.
No, like, some of their fans were like, oh, that's a support act. Let me talk to them. Mm. Which was kind of our, you know how
it
if
helps
you,
to get
if
you
go,
in.
Yeah, if you go to a party and you don't know anyone, you're really just begging that you're just, the universe that someone is going to be there that you know.
Yeah.
So it like seems like you're supposed to be there. Well, it was kind of like that. And I think we lasted about an hour. It was like, oh, this decadent ham and shit and like all this really good
ham.
Food and like amazing cheese. And then someone was just like, tap, tap, tap. Yeah, get out.
And that was a long, like, you know, we weren't making a lot of money then. Like the record hadn't come out and like.
We were
it
only
was, like,
spending money then.
Yeah, mm. It was like festival to festival. You're just mm-hmm. eating what you can get at the catering.
Yeah.
And then we were like, this is probably the best feed we're going to get all year. We can't,
can't
try. Yeah. So thank you to Depeche for taking us on tour.
For letting
and letting
you have
us
some
their
caviar.
Food.
Steal their caviar.
Yeah.
It's like me when I go on tour with Laura, I'm always like dipping into her wine on the rider. Because that, like, who drank my wine? I'm like, why is Corey in here? I'm like,
it's important. You got to know. You guys used to make fun of me for the amount of stuff I put in my bag when we leave like a green room or like if we're doing like radio promo and there's
mate,
free snacks. I'm
you
like,
take it too far.
Hamster.
You take it too far. You're
well,
like,
help yourself to those four LaCroix that we provided for you guys.
I was like, but luckily, I don't, you know, that like our actual houses aren't that far from here. But yeah, I mean, it serves me well. Like, especially if you're on a long flight or something.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if
totally.
We, like, I will never get over the idea that we get into the fancy lounge at the airport. So when I get in there,
oh,
I'm
yeah,
like, filling my bag.
Yeah,
full
I would
of
do
that.
Same.
Bits of fruit and like, yeah. snack packs. And it works well every so often for on a long
mate.
Promo day.
Yeah.
I can tell when people are getting hangry and I'm like, here, little treats.
Yeah, you've got all the cereal
treats
bars.
For everyone.
Snack bags.
Yeah. I'm not, it's a lot, Lauren. I'm not going to lie. It's like you go up to the place and like, she's got like a they've got these big bottles of like fancy sparkling water and Lauren takes her reusable
her
like
empty
water
bottle
empty
just...
water and she's standing right in the staff's face like pouring this like 10 quid bottle of fancy water into the thing like thank you I'll see you later or she's like if we're playing somewhere drivable in like in Cali she's like.
Oh.
I'll just.
Great.
She's like, I'll just drive. We're playing a winery in Napa. She's like, I'll just drive up, and she's like reversing her fucking car in, like, it's like
well,
wine and like Manuka honey.
Right. The other day I opened my last pot of tour Manuka honey, and I was like, oof. I really hope this tour in November happens because I gotta get back
yeah.
and get some
restock my honey.
Yeah.
But I also like don't like to waste and like you
that's
know,
true.
Rider
yeah.
comes out of your. Fee and stuff so
totally.
And I knew that because that winery show was like a one-off festival day and I was like nobody else lives driving distance so I guess I'll just pop it on my oh and when we did I feel like I'm just telling you when we did the Kimmel in Vegas I
oh
definitely took
God.
All that rider home
yeah
like I literally have a picture of my boyfriend carrying bags of like popcorn and chips
you're like having a
like,
yeah,
I'm not
everybody.
Gonna leave all these cheese balls behind for what for like marshmallow eat them no way I'm
yeah.
taking these
yeah.
in hindsight I was right he can buy his own cheese puffs so I'm taking this
yeah.
one
that's true however many cheese puffs you can fit in your bag
one day
yeah.
this will end and I will need my cheese puff money I don't want to spend it on cheese puffs when there's ones right
get
there
all you can get
you know
I was just thinking about when I toured in Scotland on my rider I always have like snacky things and I was provided haggis flavored crisps.
Oh yeah, know them well.
Haggis. That's
I
the one question
haggis.
I prepared for you guys. Do you eat haggis?
I think I'm the only one of the three
no,
of us
no,
that
like
really loves the haggis.
I like it now as well.
Really, you've come around?
Yeah, I prefer vegetarian haggis because obviously it's not full of fucking
haggis.
just disgusting entrails
but
or whatever.
Wait, what is? Isn't it the stomach lining of a cow?
Traditionally, it was.
So what's vegetarian? If you like vegetables inside the stomach lining of the cow?
No. It's basically like lentils done in the same spices and stuff. So it looks like haggis and it kind of tastes like it, but you're not eating.
It's not. Yeah, it's not actually haggis. Yeah. It's got the a similar kind of spice in the oats, obviously. You have oats in real haggis too, but it's all kind of like mixed in with the offal, I guess.
But you eat real haggis.
I don't eat it often. I'll have it, you know, maybe once a year or something around Burns Night.
Like, I made like a regular version and a veggie version this year for Burns Night, which is like the 25th of January. It's like the annual celebration of the poet Robert Burns
or
whatever.
The Scottish bard.
And there's like a traditional meal that you can have, and just because Martin and I haven't been able to get home, so we haven't been home since Christmas 2019. So I made two American friends and my partner, who's English. I was like, "Come on, you'll love it." And we're like, "Who wants to read the poem?" And everyone was like, "I'm like, okay, we won't read the poem. Let's just listen to." I put on the Red Hot Chili Pipers.
Wait, what?
That's the thing.
And to be fair, like, the other people that came in, one of them was a drummer, and he was, like, absolutely loving the Chili Pipers.
Oh, yeah?
Like, it's kind of does what it says on the tin. It's a pipe band that does covers of contemporary rock songs.
That's so funny.
It's not just the Red Hot Chili Pipers.
Not just.
No.
They branched
thank
out
God
from
for that.
And they're, like, pretty big. They can play, like, massive shows.
Wait,
yeah, they're
those
big.
Guys have got it right. If I could do what they did, we would be so rich. It's insane. They are like, they got so big and so many functions want them to play that they became a franchise act, and it would just be like, I think there's two or three bands there that all get sent to different places to like
should do
play
the churches.
Yeah, well,
yeah, you guys can
you
have
and
your
and
version
and
of
yeah.
it.
Well,
you're one
yeah,
of the...
I'm just like, we're the OG, but then we've like, we like anoint a few people that can do the impression to off you go.
Sweet.
Off you go.
That's
and then we split
idea.
The money.
I think there's such an appetite for that. Like, the town that I grew up in, well, I grew up in like a small village, but the next town over, the thing that would be most consistently booked at the one music venue was the Complete Stone Roses.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, the Complete Stone Roses probably have a more profitable career
than
the
Stone
actual
Roses.
Stone
Roses
totally.
And like bootleg Beatles, I've seen them like twice with my parents and stuff. Like, people are mad for this.
There was an Oasis one called Noasis that was back
in
the day.
Hearing about that.
There's a Scottish Van Halen cover band called Van Halen.
one of your Andy McGlone was in a Led Zeppelin tribute band called Ned Zeppelin for a while.
What would your tribute band be if you guys could have a tribute band?
It's not a name that really lends itself well to tribute band
what?
Puns.
Churches. Hmm. Or if you could
be if we
in
were in a...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
What would you join? You could be in a Slayer tribute band called Nair. Or Nair. I don't know. That doesn't work. It's not a good pun.
Good question.
That's us derailed now.
Yeah.
We're just going to spend the next 10 minutes thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
We stumped you guys.
Yeah.
I know.
We'll think about it over the course of the next questions.
Get back to us on
we'll
that
be listening, but in the back of our minds, we'll be thinking about puns.
All right, so last part of the show is rants and raves. And what are some of your... What are you hating right now? What are you loving right now?
I can answer both of those with the same answer. The new UK Love Island, I'm both in love and addicted to it, and also completely repelled as it holds a magnifying glass up to the worst things about particularly men in this day and age, but it's fucking awful and cruel, but my God, is it addictive.
Well, do you know of The Bachelor or Bachelorette, which is kind of like the American
equivalent? I watch both. I watched Love Island and The Bachelor.
Yeah,
I didn't watch last night,
The Bachelorette and The Bachelor and all that bullshit. But I was telling Laura about it because she hadn't heard of it before.
Oh.
And I was explaining it to her and I was like, yeah, Americans, like, I can't believe they're awful. Like, we have this show. I love it. I hate it. But I love it. And she said, well... you know, Brits are really bad too. Have you heard of this show called Naked Attraction?
Oh yeah.
The fuck, you guys? What's wrong with you guys? So,
but in a way, though, isn't that the bottom line of The Bachelor? It's just more upfront.
Yeah.
It's true. Just getting right to the point. Yeah.
I love Naked Attraction.
Okay, wait, to explain it, we have to explain it. Because I had no idea.
You didn't believe me.
I didn't believe. And then she pulled up. Okay.
There's some on YouTube. That's what she did.
She pulled up YouTube, and I was just... I'm still in shock. I'm, like, really glad you brought this up, because I've been wanting to talk about this, like, with anyone and everyone if I learned about it. Yeah. My therapist yesterday was like, enough with it. Okay. This is a show where basically it's a dating show, I guess, and there are four contestants, and then there's one person who's choosing who they want to date, and they reveal parts of the body, like the contestants are behind screens, and gradually the screens come up in stages, and they eliminate one contestant every time it reveals more. But yeah, they show Laura's like, oh no, they show penises and vaginas, and this is what on Channel 4 at like 8 p.m.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like it's insane. And I was thinking,
nine is the watershed. This is the Willy shit.
Okay, nine. Yeah, when all the kids are asleep, but it's like. I thought maybe they were in bikinis.
You thought it was blurred out, didn't
or
you?
Blurred out.
And I said, no, it's not. It's
and like they're critiquing, like zoom in to the penis, and they're like, what do you think about this penis? And I could not believe it.
Symmetrical.
They're like, it's pretty
good. And they're like, well, I kind of like it though,
because it shows how. Like, we're all superficial in a lot of ways, even though we all you say that you aren't and you try not to be about certain things. But in a way, I thought it was kind of more honest because that's what physical attraction is based on. Not necessarily someone's vagina specifically, but an arbitrary set of things that we all sign up to and co-sign, you know? Mm. So in a way, every time I'm like, yes, I love that all these panties look different. And I this is great. And at the end, just before they make the decision, they make the contestant who isn't in the cabinets or the camp.
Yeah.
They have to get naked. Yeah. So the host's like, and then you're going to go and get naked and then we'll have a chat.
And then they come back nude
to choose the person that they want. So then they're both nude when they hold hands and leave.
So the best thing is
she's
the
okay. losers. Yeah. She's like, then they hold hands.
But the losers have to like, when they go, oh, sorry, I didn't pick you, and then they have to naked hug.
Yeah, the naked hug. I
which
said that.
Is the best
I
bit.
Was like, ugh.
It's like, whoa, you're literally touching tits and dick. Like, oh, like right next to each other for this person that you don't want to get with. And then after you've touched tits and dick, they've got to leave.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's so weird. I didn't actually know about it till recently. I don't know how I missed this. Maybe because I was out here for so long, and then I, like, went back and it came on the TV, and I was like, what the hell? It's been around for ages.
Do you know what's shocking to me, though, is that the Americans haven't adopted this.
Oh, no. I think it's too far. We would pretend to be appalled by it. That's the funny thing, is Americans would, be okay with that.
It's interesting, because I even think, especially driving around Los Angeles, like, once I was in the car, and I thought to myself, I'm like, yeah, this the culture in this town specifically is obsessed with, like, tits, but terrified of nipples.
Yeah.
It's kind of this.
It's true.
Like,
so
you know,
we've
like
all
sex
got
obsessed,
them.
Like, but
what
not
the hell?
About, like,
you know?
Yeah. Whereas, and in a way, that's too real.
Yeah.
Like, we've taken away, like, the artifice and,
madness.
Like, the society. I don't know.
It's really.
And yet you have Fuckboy Island.
Yeah, so I've watched the English one and the American one.
Oh, there's an English one?
The Love Island.
Oh, Love Island.
Yeah.
No, there's one called F-Boy Island.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. But Love Island is Fuckboy Island. Yeah.
F-Boy Island.
That's where
is
you draw
terrible.
The line.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, it's not actually like you wouldn't even begin to understand the depths of bad TV that I'm willing to watch.
No, trust me, I'm
I'll
right
all
there
the
with
way,
you.
Right? I'll go all the way. Actually, right now, what I really love is Bering Sea Gold, a show about these weirdos in Alaska who dived in the ocean to like suck up gold from the seafloor.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But the, what
we
I'm
need
talking
to go
about,
back on tour.
But
we need to go back on tour.
What's really happening there?
Oh, well, I'm pretending. Well, maybe it's that people risk their lives every day and there's freezing temperatures and they. No.
There's no dicks.
Break all the time. But no, F-Boy Island is fucking terrible because they make out, because it's HBO, that they're going to say Fuckboy Island and it's going to be this kind of like modern take on it. The guys are awful. There's like three girls and they keep saying F-boy, F-boy, F-boy until it's like kind of brainwashing. And I would watch the first episode and I was like, yeah, he's an F-boy. And I was like, I said F-boy! And I turned it off immediately. I'm like, nah, this is so fucking wrong. This is a bridge too far. Get my Love Island on. Get my gold shows on. That's where it's about. Yeah.
And Lauren, what is something you are really into right now?
Well, it's only like 4 or 5 episodes out at this point, but that show White Lotus.
That is my favorite new show.
What? I haven't heard of this.
It's on HBO.
It's on HBO, and I saw a friend that recommended it, and there's so many amazing people in it. Everyone's performances are so good, but it's kind of, we were talking about it last night, and it's kind of like modernized Fawlty Towers. I don't know if Fawlty Towers was the thing here, but it was like John Cleese from Monty Python was in a British sitcom, kind of surreal sitcom about a hotel, and the Australian guy that's in White Lotus reminds me so much of this John Cleese character, but with all kinds of extra layers to it.
Yeah.
And it's so funny and so kind of, I get like teary-eyed at some of the sad stuff, and then, yeah, I just love it so much. And Steve Zahn is amazing.
I love
Connie
him.
Britton. I will watch anything really with her in it. And like Jennifer Coolidge, I feel as such a great actress, and people don't give her the credit for that because she's always in these certain kind of comedies and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, yes, very funny.
It's really, and it's also like, it's really well written, but every character is pretty believable. Like, he actually, Mike White, who wrote it, it's just like, I mean, they're exaggerated, of course. Well, kind of. But he like has his finger on the pulse of so many things going on, especially culturally. Like, it's just, it's really good.
Yes.
I agree.
And like the kind of shitty male and the newlywed couple, I'm like, I can't. I keep going like when I'm watching it, because I'm like, it's triggering.
But you
to
know
use
those
the parlance
people.
Of
That's
our time.
Thing. It
I'm
is
like a rich
real.
Dude who thinks the world owes him a favor.
And his mommy.
Yes.
And the rich mom. It's just, it's very on point.
I'm gonna have
then
to
I watch
this.
It and I'm like, oh man. And I remember working in customer service and working in bars and restaurants and being like, yeah, these people are so real. They're so, this has happened. Mm-hmm. This happens
that
all the time.
Entitlement.
But then also when I'm watching it, I'm like, it does look lovely. I'd love to go.
Well, thanks so much for coming
you.
On. And we're really looking forward to the new record. Yeah. August 27th, Screen Violence. And then it sounds like you guys have material for something else.
We're going to write a whole Love Island themed concept record.
I guess we don't have to say bye like that because they're in front of us.
Oh yeah.
Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Never Meet Your Idols.
Join us next time for season 3.
To submit questions for us or our guests, email us at nevermeetyouridols@gmail.com.
Or send us a message or voice memo on Instagram at nevermeetyouridolspodcast.
Until next time, I'm Kare.
And I'm Laura Mary.
See you next Tuesday.